and the hope that liberty and justice is for all people. But here's the truth. Attacks on our constitutional rights, yours and mine, are greater than they've ever been. The right for all to vote, reproductive rights, the rights of immigrant families, the right to equal justice for black, brown, and LGBTQ plus folks.
We protect everyone's rights. The freedom of religion, the freedom of expression, racial justice, LGBTQ rights, the rights of the disabled. We are here for everyone.
For over 100 years, the ACLU has fought on behalf of millions of Americans, protecting our vote and our voice. I believe in the ACLU because they're for real. To learn more about how the ACLU is fighting for your rights and mine, go to myaclu.org today.
Yes, don't waste any more time. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the internet at WUSB.FM. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hey, how's it going?
What is that beverage you have over there?
Nothing. Mind your own beverage.
Wow. It looks strawberry-ish. That's really nice.
Yes, it has flavoring. Just carry on. What are we talking about tonight? You're putting me on the spot.
Well, I was going to say how good the espresso I just had was, but then I see this, and I realize... You've supersized whatever it is you're making for yourself.
I'm just going to hold it under the desk here so it stops attracting so much negative attention.
You don't just display a drink like that and don't expect a comment.
I'm taking care of myself, okay? I don't think you really understand the Herculean effort that it takes to be guests and to, you know, communicate.
Uh-huh. All right. No,
And I'm trying to be as prepared and, like, useful in whatever capacity I can, and this is part of that.
Spring has exploded around us. We notice that the leaves are out, the flowers are out, birds are everywhere, all kinds of creatures. You know, the other day when I was waking up, I heard behind my head, you know, by a window, a turkey gobbling. The unmistakable sound of a turkey gobbling. Not once, but, you know, a bunch of times. I don't know what the issue was, but it's a sound that definitely commands attention. There's just all kinds of sounds of spring going on, which is great. You know, it's amazing. I miss winter, but it was a good winter, and hopefully it'll be a good spring as well.
Yeah, I recorded a video the other day, and the background noise was all birds singing or screeching or whatever they do. But, yeah, it was pretty melodic.
You know, the whole thing, I think we should do this at USB. They do it at BBC, the bird song thing in the spring. You know, we've heard that a couple of times. Once we heard it completely by accident, and then we were just transfixed by it. Basically, they send somebody out into the forest at dawn on a particular date when spring is springing. And they just identify all the birds that come out. You know, they have a bunch of birders, that's what they're called. And they just, and you can do that on BBC. You can have an hour-long program just about birds or about gardens or things like that. I don't know why we can't do that here. I think it's a great idea. But, you know, hearing that was really inspirational. And I've always thought that, you know, here on Long Island, we have a lot of birds, including turkeys sometimes. And it would be good to broadcast live from a forest someplace.
That's why you don't dismiss people that have special interests in those things, because when an event like that happens and you're curious about that stuff, it's good to have people that are passionate about it telling you and interpreting and, you know, sharing their knowledge.
Do you have a passion and are ridiculed for having that passion? Well, here at USB, we will not dismiss you. We will not turn you away. All kinds of strange, bizarre interests. Maybe I shouldn't say it that way. Just unique interests, you know, things that you understand that other people might not. Those are good things. And, you know, I know so many people who have passions for one thing or another that feel like, you know, okay, it's an oddity. It's not an oddity. You know, people have interest in all sorts of different areas, and that is what makes us, you know, unique and knowledgeable. And if we share the information, there's no telling what we can learn. So, yes, bird songs, you know, being able to identify, again, all these birds singing back and forth. I mean, you know, I was commenting on this the other day. You know, you hear one bird making a unique sound, and then you hear another sound that's the same sound further away. So it's obviously the same kind of bird, and they're talking back and forth. And I just wonder, why don't you guys just get together already? You're obviously talking to each other. Is it some kind of a beef or something? What's going on? Are you warning the other bird to stay away from you? Or are you looking for the other bird? If you're looking for the other bird, well, there they are. They just identify themselves. Instead, a half hour back and forth, you know, the whole forest has to hear this. And I'm not sure that's fair to all the other birds. There are many species out there. They all make different sounds. You know, I don't understand how anyone's able to understand what's going on with all the cacophony of chirping and tweeting and screeching and whatever else goes on out there. Come on. Get it together. Organize a little bit. You know, take turns. And maybe somebody else can hear what they're saying. And I'm sorry, Kyle, that your video was destroyed by all the birds singing. And
I didn't say destroyed. You said destroyed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got there on my own then. All right. Well, speaking about singing, this is Eurovision Week. And Eurovision, in case you don't know about it, is an annual competition that takes place in Europe, hence Eurovision. Basically, countries have entries. They have competitions within their countries. They have a champion. It's kind of like football. And then they send that champion to the competition, which this year is happening in Vienna, in Austria. And the reason it's happening there is because last year the winner was the Austrian entry. So that is how the whole competition works. And right now, and this is why I'm avoiding the news right now, there is a semifinal taking place.
That's what you were talking about earlier.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I was doing more than talking about it. I was actually playing it. Because this year, and this is amazing, YouTube in the United States actually is allowing access to the two semifinals, one today, one on Thursday, and the final on Saturday. You can actually watch. You don't have to go through what was the stupid streaming service. Peacock, yeah, it was, and you know, you don't have to pay to see it. You can see it on YouTube. Sure.
Prior to that, we'd done VPNs, I think.
Yeah,
I mean, it's always been a workaround.
You can still do VPNs if you need to, but you don't need to anymore. You will get Google ads, unfortunately, in YouTube, unless you have an ad blocker, then you can get around that. But it's amazing to see this, to see it all happen. Today they're eliminating five teams because. It's kind of a weird definition of semifinal because they have a total of 35 countries represented. Today they eliminate five. I think Thursday they eliminate another five. And then I guess that means they have 25 going into Saturday. So that's not really how semifinals usually work, but that's how it works in this particular case. So today, it might even be happening still right now, or it's just finishing up. You have Belgium, Croatia, Estonia, Finland, Georgia, Greece, Israel, Lithuania, Moldova, Montenegro, Poland, Portugal, San Marino, Serbia, and Sweden. And of those, five will be eliminated. There are more teams or more countries that will be represented on Thursday. And then whoever is remaining there will go to the final on Saturday. And then there are also countries that don't have to worry because they automatically qualify for the final, including the host country, Austria. And then you have other countries that just are big and contribute a lot of money, so they kind of make their way through every year. And that includes France, Germany, Italy, and United Kingdom. Now, you might be saying, Emmanuel, why didn't you say Spain? Well, I didn't say Spain because Spain isn't in it this year. Yeah, they would normally be one of the big countries that automatically makes it to the final, but they decided to boycott this year. Why? They are boycotting because Israel is participating, and that opens up a whole kettle of fish. More countries are boycotting Eurovision this year than ever before. Five countries, all in all, are boycotting because of Israel's participation. They are Spain. They are Netherlands, Ireland, Iceland, and Slovenia. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one. So those five countries normally would be represented, and they are not represented this year. So, yeah, so Israel's participation is a big controversy, threatens to derail the entire competition.
All of the countries, by the way, that you listed have had pretty strong showings in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, remarkable and memorable performances.
Absolutely.
So that is a, you know, serious choice.
Yeah.
And so that's something that they're just, you know, not interested this time.
The artists, you know, get hurt, obviously. But, you know, you have to look at this... the way it is dealt with in other situations. For instance, when Russia invaded Ukraine, well, look, Russia's not in it anymore. That wasn't hard. That was not a hard decision. Russia is not allowed to be in Eurovision. And they're in Europe. Israel is not in Europe. It shouldn't be so hard to say, you know what, you're you know, killing all these people, innocent people, 70,000 civilians. That's a bit much. Why don't you sit it out, you know, fix your country, then come back when you're done, even though you're not in Europe. You know, that to me seems like the logical way to deal with the situation. Now,
and how else do you put pressure on?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. The thing is, right now I mentioned the semifinal is happening. I also mentioned Israel is in that. It might be taken care of. They might get eliminated. But here's the thing. They also cheat, and that's a big problem. Israel has this unfortunate habit of having their government get involved, which you're not supposed to do. And basically, the way the voting works, the way the popular voting works, there's a jury and then there's popular voting. As of last year, you could vote, I believe, 20 times. This year, they've cut it down to 10 because of Israel's abusing the system. But what Israel has done is they've had their government basically put up posters and have advertising campaigns in other countries throughout Europe.
Soliciting.
Telling people that, you know, you can vote for Israel. Vote for Israel 20 times. You're not allowed to vote in your own country for your own country. So that doesn't work in Israel unless, you know, they figure out a way around that. So basically, nobody else does that. But Israel was doing that, probably is still doing that. It's cheating. It's not the way it's supposed to work. So that caused a whole big controversy as well. And I don't know if it'll happen again this year. You know, last year they finished in second place when their song was nowhere near as good as the top songs, and they were very unpopular. So how does that happen? How does somebody get to be second place? Well, you cheat, and that's how you get there. So, you know, I think it's time for, you know, a timeout for Israel to not be a part of this competition. Geographically, it doesn't make sense, and moralistically, it doesn't make sense either. You know, the United States shouldn't be in it, and we're not, because we're not in Europe, and right now, you know, we kind of suck. So, you know, if you're up to no good, then it kind of takes away from the whole spirit of the competition, which is positive. It's so positive, and, you know, this is not in any way a combination of any of the artists that are involved. There are so many good musicians that come out of Israel, but, you know, people suffer because of the actions of governments, and that's why it's up to the people to correct that. And I'm looking at us when I say that, because, boy, we have a lot to answer for here. And we have some things to talk about that happened in the last week, of course.
Yeah, and it can be a way of, like, laundering your reputation, and doing that through artists on behalf of a nation state seems, it seems like kind of really disingenuous or just totally unfair to those artists, like you were pointing out. But, I mean, they should answer for those things before participating in something like this and having people kind of turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, I mean,
but,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying if Russia can be, you know, pointed to as an example without much controversy, this shouldn't be controversial either.
Well, some of those things were hard fought. I mean, there's been steady campaigns for that nation's reputation, and they want very much to be perceived in certain ways and manipulate and twist and turn around the narratives and the kinds of attitudes that people rightfully have because of the kind of free press and understanding of their actions in theaters of war and invasions and the like. I wish we were as clear-eyed about our own actions across the board, but that's also, I think, a failure of reporting. But, you know, Saudi Arabia, many other countries, like I'm thinking of that LIV, the golf tournament,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
trying to, like, basically just, you know, rinse and wash the old reputation of the country because of some ugliness that came out through, dare I say, reporting and investigative mm-hmm. journalism.
Right.
Again, you know, doing the tough task of asking questions. So be that as it may, I mean, the sort of reality and the backdrop of it all, who are you thinking looks good that's in this semifinal? Or, like, what's it stacking up to? Because I know you remarked about a place that we had traveled to that sounded
yeah.
really good, and I heard a couple other ones.
Well, I have my favorite. My favorite is a country I think that won't actually win. Actually, you know, that's not entirely true. I do have a view of what the best piece is, and I also have the one I like the best, which I know isn't going to win, just because it's kind of wacky and well, because unfortunately a lot of this a lot of the voting is favorite countries and things like that. And I don't think this country has gotten to the point yet where people will vote for it, no matter how good the piece is. So, okay, maybe I'll just play this one. You want to just hear my favorite?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a country we went to, although, you know, most of these are countries we've been to. But this one is a unique country. It's a fun country. And it's something that I think Kyle and I both suggest checking out. I'm talking about Moldova. Let's listen. But get into that. Oh, it's just like being over there again. So that's Moldova's entry. They're not going to win, but boy, that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of fun to watch. You can see all 35 videos on YouTube. Just look up Eurovision 2026 and decide which ones you like best. I'm going to play the one I think is going to win at the end of the show, and I'll let you know which other ones I thought were. I voted on all of mine already. Not officially, just for my own purposes. But let's move on. Let's move on to some other things that are going on. You know, it's been a bad week. It's been another bad week, yes, with courts making decisions that seem to favor one side over another repeatedly. And I know, you know, a lot of people are very frustrated right now because it seems like this whole gerrymandering, redistricting craze that's going on. The way things are set up right now in this country Republicans have the right to redraw districts as much as they want. Democrats do not. I mean, that sounds crazy, but look around you. That is what is happening. We had a situation in Virginia where the people clearly chose to redistrict as a response to all the redistricting that was going on without asking people their opinion. I'm talking about states like Texas and Alabama and every state in the Deep South, Florida, you name it. In the middle of the night, or it doesn't really matter what time of day, because they don't ask the people what they think. They just do it. They just say, you know what, we're going to redistrict this, and nobody can do anything about it because well, we can. Virginia, on the other hand, had a vote, and they asked the people, should we do this? And the people said, yeah, damn right you should do this. You know, the other side keeps doing this. About time our side did this. Well, the Republican Supreme Court of Virginia said, nuh-uh, you don't get to do that because you're Democrats and we don't want you to have this. Well, they didn't say it in those words, but they said that. They said that. So what that means is that Democrats lose, Republicans win. Democrats ask for the people's opinion. And it doesn't matter. And I think that's the theme that you're going to be seeing a lot of. Doesn't matter what the people say. It's the people that are in power. They get to say what happens. So that's where we are heading right now. We're heading to a country where elections aren't going to make any difference. Yeah, gerrymandering does that. Because what you wind up doing is you wind up moving people into districts where even if they vote for what they want, well, there are more people voting for something else in that district. And even if they have a lot of people on their side, those people get split up. Those people get split up and fractured, and their votes don't count as much. You know, you might have 100 people voting for something, but if you split them into four districts, you only have 25 voting for something. And that 25 isn't enough to counter the 50 that are also in those districts voting for something else. So what you wind up having a lot of people that are voting for a candidate, voting for a policy, voting for something. And it doesn't count. It doesn't count because of what district they are in. Now, districts used to make sense, you know, geographical, but now it can go down a block. It can go, you know, one side of a block could be one, the other side can be something else. I don't know how they actually calculate this. But according to our Supreme Court, the Supreme Court, you have to prove, you have to absolutely prove that they intend to disenfranchise somebody based on race. That's impossible to prove because somebody has to admit that they're doing that, and good luck getting somebody to admit to doing something of that nature, knowing that that is what is needed to stop it. They will never admit this, but all you have to do is look at the effect. And also, you know, something else you should look at, how quickly these states jumped into action after the Supreme Court ruling. They were ready to go. They knew exactly what to do. Me, I don't know what to do. I mean, I could look at list of voters, and yeah, you know, you have names, you have birth dates, you have addresses, you have party registration, and yes, you have race. That's in there. It doesn't have to be in there, but it's in there. So you can catalog with all of those factors. And you could have everybody whose street name begins with the letter D in one district for whatever purpose that would serve. Or you could have everybody whose race is Hispanic in a particular district. You can do that. But again, without proving that they're being redistricted, if that's a word, because of race or to disenfranchise. Actually, it's the disenfranchising you have to prove, that that's what they intend to do. Without that, you have nothing, according to the Supreme Court. In the court of public opinion, it's very different. But in the Supreme Court, yeah, no, you can't prove there's any racism because they're not saying they're racist. That is where we are. That is where we are right now. So people are extremely frustrated. And I totally get being frustrated to the point where they're about to give up on the whole system. And that can go one of two ways. That can basically result in a lot of people just not caring what happens. Or that can result in a lot of people really caring what happens and not tolerating when something happens that shouldn't happen. And that is when you wind up going down some very dangerous roads. That is where people start burning the buildings down. You think it's far away. It's not as far away as you might believe. When you basically tell somebody over and over again, their voice doesn't count. That no matter what they do, there's always a checkmate down the road. There's only so much of that people can take. We're seeing, you know, some reaction, some irrational reactions going on. And, of course, the other side loves to portray their opponents as being 100% on the side of these irrational people, which is not the case at all. But moods change. And we're getting to a point where it's not going to be a civil disagreement for long. If you keep playing these games, bad things will happen. Courts need to be fair. Elections need to be fair. When that stops, you know, the people lose faith in the system. It doesn't matter anymore.
It's already happened with the courts. Sorry. It's already happened with the courts in a lot of ways. The sense that you can actually seek justice and that there isn't a huge political bias already baked into, based on a lot of the appointees and the judges that are now ruling in just absurd ways, like absurd fealty to this administration's stated priorities, and none of them seem to really care about their integrity or reputation or the reputation of the court system itself. But it's a real shame because, as I've said, and I feel like I said this last week, this is what happens when you lose recourse in our system. The entirety of it was built so that, A, we didn't live under monarchies and that sort of system, and B, so that we didn't resort to, you know, violence and, mm-hmm. Vigilante justice and the kinds of mob rule and inconsistency, retribution and stuff and, you know, honor killings and all that kind of stuff, that stuff doesn't occur or was curbed by the system that we have in place. I mean, that's the point of it. And I feel like I'm repeating myself constantly, or it's worth repeating over and over again. We must remind ourselves, like, that's why we need to uphold these things and not have it be laughable. Anyway, I'm done. I'm going
it is laughable. And, lectures from the right wing about how we shouldn't be looking at race as the issue here. You tell us that. You tell us how race is no longer an issue, how racism has been solved, and we should just draw these crazy patterns and make districts that just so happen to exclude people of a certain race and tell us the problem is solved. It's absurd. It's crazy. And that's where we are right now. That's where we are. It doesn't have to stay that way. Obviously, if people vote en masse, if people, I don't want to say people have to move, but if people do move into other districts, it kind of messes up their plans, but that's a lot to ask of people. Maybe misrepresent the party you're affiliated with. These are ridiculous solutions, though. You know, you shouldn't have to do any of this. Or maybe not fill in race as part of voter registration. I don't know, but there have to be some clever ways of countering this rather than just rolling over and giving up. You know, that's definitely not something. And the one thing that definitely makes a difference is people power showing up in numbers greater than ever before, not giving up. Giving up is never the right thing to do. So I just hope this is motivating. It tells you who these people are. The fact that they were able to do this so quickly means that they've been waiting. They've been waiting a long time for this. All right, let's look at something else that happened in court. A New York State Supreme Court judge ruled today that our good friend Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman should be allowed to participate in the state's matching funds program in his race for governor. Yeah, he had lost all those funds because he didn't fill out the form correctly. And, you know, we all knew that if the tables were turned and it was a Democrat that had filled out the form incorrectly, they would never be saying, yes, just let him go through anyway. So it was kind of ridiculous that he would expect Democrats to do that with him. Well, Judge Denise Hartman decided that a decision by the State Public Campaign Finance Board to remove Blakeman over a paperwork error was arbitrary and capricious. So once again, the courts have sided with the Republican. But you know what's different about this? Judge Denise Hartman was appointed by Kathy Hochul. Yeah. So, you know, that's how courts should work. Where, you know, it's not just because you're appointed by a particular person that you rule on their side each and every time. That's not how it's supposed to work. So what happened in New York, that's how the system works. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And I think everybody sees that. When do we see that in Alabama? When do we see that in Florida? When do we see that in, all these states, Texas, places where things are just being rubber stamped and a one-party system is what's being sought after? When does that happen? When does the U.S. Supreme Court do something that really pisses off the Republicans? Oh, I know the Republicans are going to say, oh, wow, we're not happy with that decision, when in fact they really are happy with that decision. They absolutely are, because we are so much further to the right than we have ever been. Again, you know, you lose faith in the system. That's when everything starts to fall apart. And it may seem like Republicans are winning, but they're signing their own doom here, because the majority of the country are going to lose all faith. And what do you have at that point? All right.
Yeah, it's the amount of people they're losing, I think, is a key factor in this. That people are still diehard, that's fine. There are so many others that are furious and that have completely, like, done an about-face, like 180 on this. Yeah, it may not hit the mainstream. There may be, like, a lot of fear-mongering in the media about, like, oh no, what's going to happen if, you know, the Democrats, putting all this sort of pressure on as if people don't already know. I think the voters know that they are being encouraged by their leaders and by organizations, across this country that we often hear from around, campaign season, whether it's polling groups or special interest groups. They are telling people, what they're hearing, and echoing what a lot of the voters feel, which is that the stakes are as high as they've ever been, that this is it. You know, we really have to right the ship and change course.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not both sides things. Yeah, you know, you can find hypocrisy in any political group, but what we're seeing now, it's not a, you know, both sides are doing the same thing. They're not. They're clearly not. We just, you know, demonstrated now with the court system in New York that does not always go one way. And that is so true of a variety of topics.
And let's reframe what those sides are. Mm-hmm. This is Americans versus the ghosts of MAGA. Like, that's it. It really isn't about, okay, you're independent, you're green, mm-hmm. you're really a socialist Republican. You know, like, okay, we can call each other, you know, playground names all we want in the within the strictures of political identity, but it really is coming down to what are our national priorities as Americans, and the adversary to that at this point is what I believe, or what we should, I don't know, we could come up with more names, but I'm thinking it's the ghosts of these policies. It's the remnants. It's whomever is still clinging on, you know, and trying to grasp what control is eroding because of the exodus of support, I hope.
Well, yeah. The thing is, though, amongst Republicans and MAGA people, they still support what Trump is doing. They don't know what Trump is doing. Trump doesn't know what Trump is doing. But they're not going to give up whatever it is they think they're standing for. They're just going to, you know, no matter how nonsensical it is.
Right. And then when they lose and there's progress and, you know, anything good happens, they're going to be the ones cranky, you know, complaining that it shouldn't be this way, that there's any progress at all. If mm-hmm. anyone does anything outside of this abject destruction, with a veneer of whatever kind of quasi-patriotism they want to tout, they're still going to be complaining. They'll be complaining when they lose even more.
Well, yeah, I hope
they'll so. They'll be so dissatisfied at anything uh-huh. that looks like any kind of progress. And everything they're told is progress that is actually destruction from this administration, they are sitting back feeling smug and wagging their fingers telling us this is how it should be.
But the thing to remember, Kyle, they are the minority. They always have been the minority, and hopefully they always will be the minority. It's because of these crazy systems that they have more of a voice than they deserve. You know, because of the gerrymandering, because of the Electoral College, you know, all kinds of little strategies that their party knows how to, abuse. That's how they keep staying in power. The majority of people don't want this. I mean, look at how the Senate is set up. You get two senators per state, no matter how sparsely populated they are. They get to decide who the Supreme Court justices are. Doesn't that seem a little crazy that there's four senators in the two Dakotas and two in California? it doesn't make any sense. The amount of people being represented is a fraction of the amount of people that are in Democratic states. There are so many things that you can point to that just are unfair, outdated, and open to abuse. And that's exactly what is happening. Let me go through a couple other things that are happening because we're almost out of time. This I just saw in the Washington Post. President Trump shared a Truth Social post late last night that called for the arrest of Barack Obama, accusing the former president of treason without evidence. Post, it's not funny, but the post was part of a flurry of late night activity on Trump's social media page, in which the president shared several posts that railed against his political opponents. The Washington Post wants money to read the rest of it, so I don't know any more than this. That's all I saw. So that's the kind of late night craziness that's typical here. You know, it's funny, but it's sad. Okay, and then you've got Crazy Lee Zeldin, former representative of this area, now head of the Environmental Protection Agency, an organization that he is trying to destroy, and along with our air quality, water quality, regulations that keep us safe. It's like having a terrorist in charge that is intent on killing as many people as possible. And I can say that about so many people in this administration. They don't give a rat's ass about you. It doesn't matter if you're MAGA or a communist. We are all completely irrelevant. They are just making money hand over fist and abusing the system however much they can. But yeah, Lee Zeldin is proposing major cuts to state grants. Yeah, 90%. A 90% cut to funds that go towards a range of local clean water and air quality initiatives across different states. He's in his second year as EPA administrator. He continues to call for a major downsizing of the agency, arguing that states should assume more responsibility over environmental protection funding. Well, guess what, Lee? We pay taxes. We pay taxes to you bastards. All right? So, you know, maybe we stop paying taxes and, yeah, we can just run things ourselves. That would be nice. You know, kick ICE the hell out of our state completely. And you as well. 90% cut. I mean, do you know the kind of effect that is going to have? It's insane, but this is typical. And then they try and justify it by implying that we're overspending, wasting money. And meanwhile, the amount of money being spent on this Iran charade is crazy. I can't even put it into words. It's just however much you want to spend on this military adventurism, oh, yeah, that's okay. But, you know, there's people that need health care. Oh, we can't do that. We can't afford health care. We can't afford to help our citizens, you know, even veterans, people who have put their lives on the line. No, we can't. They're on their own. Let them fend for themselves. It's called responsibility. Meanwhile, let's take another $1 billion a day for something that's making us less safe. It's disgusting. It really is disgusting. And I think, you know, more people see that now than ever before, but that still has to translate into action. Okay, and then you got the ballroom. I mean, I think this is pissing everybody off. it is. Kyle, it's funny. It is funny, but
it's so not relatable, and it's just the worst because no one in their daily life, like, this is the most, like, distant, just furthest thing from most people's every day, and he keeps talking about it like it's a bread and butter, like, kitchen table thing. It's not. No one cares. And
people care. They just don't care the way he thinks.
Yeah, he's lied about who's going to pay for it. Go on. Just read the story.
Well, I mean, the story goes on forever. But basically, you know, this idiot tore down part of the White House, a big part of the White House.
Without permission.
Without permission. And we're letting him get away with it. And then
somehow he's still president.
Then he lies and says that this ballroom is going to be funded completely by private donations or my own personal donations. Then, oh, look, this guy tried to kill me. Well, we can't do that anymore. We're going to need $1 billion for security. Literally within a few hours, they had it all ready to go. It's like, you know, I don't want to sound like one of these conspiracy nuts. I really don't, because I don't believe it's a conspiracy. But it's like they hired the guy to run down the hallway and do that so that, you know, they could say, oh, look how dangerous this is. We have to have a ballroom. We have to, you know, get security, $1 billion from taxpayers. You saw what happened. It was right there.
And it's also great because he likes punishing the media. So I'm going to use this media thing to punish the people that don't like me because the media's in on it, and then I'm going to get my ballroom. You know, it's just good, like, never a missed opportunity. It's like a slip and fall.
It's a good conspiracy, though. If you're going to do conspiracy theories, this is one of the better ones. Because, look, you hire the guy. The guy doesn't die. The guy, you know, Secret Service, they somehow missed. The Secret Service, nobody hit him. Or if they did hit him, they just hit him like a little bit. So, okay, so this guy is charging down towards the president, supposedly, and everybody misses. And now you have the reason to bill the American public $1 billion. And you know, people like Fetterman are you know, supposedly Democrats saying, oh, yeah, this proves that we need the ballroom. No, it doesn't. First of all, the event is not the kind of event you have in the ballroom. The event is run by the press. And the press is not part of the White House. The press is the press. Does nobody understand this? It's going to continue to have events in hotels, which I guess are unacceptable to our dear leaders now. Okay, fine. You know what? You stay out then. You stay out. We'll roast you without you being there. Doesn't matter. So this whole thing is crazy. I think a lot of people are realizing. And by the way, I don't believe in the conspiracy, so don't quote me on that.
A lot of people
are realizing they're being lied to. They really are.
There's so many people that are kind of questioning that. I mean, you don't even have to subscribe to it. There are plenty of people that are like, okay, this is just too perfect for under the circumstances. But we may or may not find out. Where it fits in all of this, it's tough. But, you know, sitting and looking at it for a long time, we'll leave that to the history books. We have to move on.
Well, Republicans returned to Washington yesterday, now they are facing questions about the $1 billion Senate security proposal. to help pay for Trump's ballroom, and Democrats say they will try to defeat it. You know, if this goes through, if this actually goes through, and Republicans in the Senate and in the House are approving spending $1 billion of our taxpayer money for this charade, every one of those people need to be put on a list, and every one of them need to lose their jobs. Absolutely. Nick LaLota, we're looking at you. You're our representative here on Long Island. Are you going to vote for this? Because if you do, you have no honor whatsoever. It's theft. It is literally theft. This guy tore down a building and now expects us to pay for his dream or whatever.
Whim.
It's disgusting.
The other part of this, well, I just think like the support in general, it even if Democrats are able to block in any way this expenditure, which should not happen and was never a part of this, where's all the money that was privately raised? Where, I mean, if it was going to be that, why this instead? Where's that money going to go?
Well, it costs more now because the guy ran down the hallway.
Oh, right. So they're still spending what they were originally going to spend.
They were going to do it, but then someone had to ruin it for everybody.
More.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So
got it.
Don't do that again, or there'll be more money.
My point is, if Democrats block this at all, even if we win by not having to pay for this because it's not something that we should be responsible for, I don't count that as a win.
No, because they still tore down
why
the White House.
And Democrats have so many other things to fight, like to call this like some big victory. No, this is some ancillary extra stuff. Yes, we need to stop it.
This is where you stop playing by the rules because, you know, the Republicans are saying, oh, we can do this without Democrats. Okay, so you're going to do it without Democrats, then you know what? Good luck getting in the door because we're going to block it. We're going to shut down this whole city. It's time Democrats actually, you know, grew some testicles and did something. Because it's insane what they let them get away with. And, it's not going to be pleasant anymore. But look at how unpleasant it has gotten by being civilized. It doesn't work. And people are going to start saying elections don't work. And when elections don't work, what does that leave? This is the scenario that they are painting. And it's not something I want to see happen, but it's getting more and more inevitable.
Yeah, and you know what? It might not be as messy as you're imagining. I mean, people could be very strategic under those circumstances. And we're already seeing it with these people rushing events and you know, becoming vigilantes. And it's, I think it's a generational thing too. Like, a lot of these people will age out, whether they are voters or leaders. And I think their instinct and impulse to raise a new generation, I think that has had pause, those plans, in some ways, because a lot of those younger entrants to their politics are like, oh yeah, there's guns and crazy people in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just go saying anything you want and expect that you'll be safe everywhere. You have got to be reasonable in your politics and not demonize and trample and throw everyone else under the bus just because you feel like you are supreme in some way in our pluralistic society. That does not fly. And, I just think that they eventually will go, and our actions now are absolutely the beginnings, the catalysts for all of that.
Well, we're going to have to stop there as we're running out of time. I do want to bookend it, though, with another Blakeman headline. You know how Nassau County Executive Blakeman is partnering with ICE and locking up as many immigrants as possible because they're dangerous? That was his initial statement. Well, it turns out less than 5% of immigrants jailed through the Blakeman-ICE partnership had violent records. Less than 5%. That's according to Newsday. And also, Kathy Hochul will be directing New York State to move ahead in ending local cooperation pacts with ICE, and that includes Blakeman. And just today, East Hampton Town has barred ICE cooperation deals. So good things are happening. Good things are happening. They will continue to happen. We just have to stay strong and be united, work together, work with each other, and write to us. otw@2600.com is our email address. Support WUSB. Go to WUSB.fm and pledge whatever you can afford to keep this radio station going. And we are going to now leave with what I consider to be the best Eurovision song of 2026. Hang on, I gotta find my list.
I think I know this.
Do you?
Well, wait, was it the one you played earlier?
Damn it! Okay,
why do you have? You already voted on this.
I did. Okay, so the countries I think have the strongest songs: Armenia, Bulgaria, Georgia, Italy, Luxembourg. Yes, Luxembourg, Moldova, as mentioned, and Switzerland. But there's only one song that I believe is the winner. And we're going to go out with that now. This is from France. Good night.
Quand tout s'illumine dans tout Paris, que les rues se vident, je reste ici, j'ai cherché.